Welcome to a series of netcasts brought to you by Yale University.
During the spring of 2012, two members of the Community and Economic Development Clinic at Yale Law School, Elizabeth Kelly and Hannah Ruth Gustafson, traveled to Brazil to research innovations in urban planning and transportation. The following is an interview they conducted with Dr. Orlando Strambi of the Department of Transportation Engineering at the University of Sao Paulo. Dr. Strambi is involved with the development of Sao Paulo's new strategic plan, Sao Paulo 2040, and he shared his thoughts on the transportation obstacles facing Sao Paulo at the moment and potential solutions for addressing them.
Dr. Strambi, thank you so much for being with us here today. If you wouldn't mind by starting, maybe just by introducing yourself and explaining a little bit about your work and past work and research.
Okay, I am Orlando Strambi. I am a professor of urban transportation at the Polytechnic School of the University of Sao Paulo in Brazil. My work is mostly on transportation planning and policy. My specific area of research is on demand modeling. I think something that among the most recent activities was participating in the strategic plan for 2040. That was the first time the city was engaged in some sort of long-range strategic planning, and there was a group of people from the university who have participated in different groups. I was involved in transportation, the mobility and accessibility group. There was urban development, there was environment, there was business opportunities and social cohesion.
Could you maybe start by just giving us a bit of an overview about the modal split here in Sao Paulo, the different types of transportation opportunities available to people, both the private ones, public transportation?
Yes, Sao Paulo has a sort of a one-third modal split, considering public transport, private transport, and non-motorized, which is basically walking. It's a very small proportion of bicycling trips. So about one-third of walking, basically, one-third of cars, basically, and the other third is mostly bus, but a growing number by metro and train. Okay, metro and train has sort of, you could say, double their demand in the last 5 years, especially after what we call the Bilhete Único, which is the unified ticket for using public transport in the city. And when the metro and train integrated with the bus system, which was already using the single ticket, the demand for bus and train have started growing a lot. Also improvements in the train system and extensions in the metro system. So this is the basic modal split for Sao Paulo.
And you mentioned that one of the projects you've been working on is the long-term planning with the city. 2040, what does that split look like? What is the city anticipating or planning for?
Well, the basic idea is to increase the proportion of trips by public transport. In terms of targets or goals, we aim for something like 70, for motorized trips, something like 70% by public transport and 30% by cars. This is a significant change for now, because you have something like, for motorized, you have something half and half, 50-50. So there will be a significant increase in public transportation, based on a significant extension on the metro system, a continuous improving of the train system, and also additions of new high-capacity bus corridors in the city. So that was the whole set.
Could you tell us more about the high-capacity bus corridors? Sort of, are they rapid transiters, a designated bus lane? What does it mean to be high-capacity?
What I call high-capacity buses would probably be considered sort of a middle or intermediate capacity transportation, public transportation mode.
Okay.
But for buses, you would call high capacity if you have what is now called those bus rapid transit or okay. BRT systems. Although most of the seeds or the basic ideas for BRT system developing in Brazil, and Curitiba is recognized as the leading or the pioneer city in the sense, Other Brazilian cities also experimented with other aspects of bus operation and bus infrastructure and bus technology, but these have all been put together. And the leading example in this case is the Transmilenio system in Bogota, which had an important participation of Brazilian consultants. When what happens is that several of the ideas that were sort of spread around different Brazilian cities and other places in the world were sort of put together in a high capacity system. When I mean high capacity, in terms of number, we're talking, if you talk metro, you're talking in the range of 60 to 70,000 passenger per hour per direction. When you used to talk about buses, you would talk about 10 to 15. And now you have the Transmilenio in Bogota operating at the range of 45,000. So you start getting close to metro and train classical capacities by operating proper bus systems with the adequate infrastructure, technology, and design and operation. So that would be a sort of a high capacity, what I was calling high capacity, high performance. It has to be both. Mm-hmm. You have some very high performance. If you go to Europe, you don't have such high levels of demand. Right. So you have what they call in France, bus, l'autobus au niveau de service, which is a high level service, but it's not a high capacity service because they don't need a high capacity service, but they provide a high level service. The BRT, the current ones are more on the high capacity than on the high level service. They're not providing very good level of service, but compared to the systems they usually are replacing, mm-hmm. They are comparing better levels of service. So that would be what you describe as a sort of a high capacity, high performance bus systems. They require a proper infrastructure, mm-hmm. proper technology, vehicle and control technology, and proper operations. So that what makes a bus system a good quality system.
Besides Curitiba, what would you say are other top quality BRT systems in Brazil?
In Brazil,
because it seemed like Rio de Janeiro was
Rio de Janeiro is building one, and I think right. The first section will start operating in May or something like that. Yeah. Very close. Rio will probably have the best BRT system mm-hmm. in operation. So if it all works as planned, mm-hmm. we'll have by far the best BRT system in Brazil. So we will have the lead in the near future. Mm-hmm.
Are there particular decisions that were made in the planning of that BRT system that you believe contribute to why it would be the best?
They had to follow the requirements of the FIFA, the Federal International mm-hmm. Football Association, and the Olympics.
Got it.
So, and one critical bottleneck was transportation.
Right.
And they were able to show them that they could cater for the demand using a very well-designed BRT system. So they were years impressed to have something working properly in place. So it was basically a decision taken under pressure from both FIFA and the Olympics Committee. So,
one of the things we wanted to ask you about too, then, in increasing the use of public transportation, how do you attract people who now have the resources to make the choice to use a private car, something like that? How do you get those people to use private public transportation? Certainly a challenge in the U.S.
Yes, and challenging here also.
Yeah.
Well, we have to improve public transport. That comes first. And the plan, basically what it does, it incorporates plans that have been developed by the metro company and by the train company. So it's basically expand metro, improve trains, because we have a very large train network, but the service was very, very poor, and that's being improved. new stations are being added, new rolling stock is being bought. It's being improved. Extend metro, improve train, extend bus corridors, which was something that we start doing in the 80s, then we have done very little in the last decade. So improve public transport. Then in 2025, when all that is in place, consider congestion charging. Okay, so that there is a stick and a carrot. Actually, I believe, and I think most people in the transportation area will believe, that it's very hard to simply attract people from car.
You
have
need
to
the stick. For those listening to this later, not everyone might be familiar with congestion charging. Would you mind just giving a brief overview of congestion charging. And maybe what the thoughts would be for how that would be implemented in
okay.
Sao Paulo?
Congestion charging is actually charging for each individual for his real costs when using a congested piece of highway. The fact is that when someone else comes into the traffic stream, he makes that decision based on how long it's going to take him personally to drive. But he's also causing an impact on everybody else's travel time that he doesn't feel, but everybody else does. This is called an externality. So the idea of congestion charge is to inform him that his decision has this extra cost. Okay, so if you know that your trip really costs to society what you see and what you don't see, but when you have that information or you have to pay for that, you're going to think twice if the benefits of your trip will compensate the costs. So that's the idea. It's really a mechanism of signing, of informing people of the real costs of the trips. That's the idea of congestion charging. How to implement that? That's a very undesirable from political perspective or anything like that. Politicians hate, car drivers hate it, but some cities are starting to adopt. London and Stockholm, which are the most recent examples, they had this very interesting development that in London, a mayor was elected with a proposal to implement congestion charging. Then he was re-elected with a proposal to expand the charging area and increase the price. And he was re-elected. And in Stockholm, they just built a pilot run for 6 months, turned it off, did a referendum, and the vote was to go on with the congestion pricing system. So once people was able to assess the benefits, they changed to a position which was against it to a position that was in favor. So there must be something good. I'm not personally definitely in favor. I think it has to be considered. And some societies may think, well, this will work for us, and others may just think, no, that's not for us, or not yet. I do believe that a city like São Paulo, with the size of the problem here, you have a taste of what traffic congestion is in São Paulo. It's really, really serious. It cannot pretend, it should not be discussing at least. So the idea is, well, it's going to take some time, because every new mayor comes, well, this is not for my term. Maybe if they have a second term, they will consider it. But what happened in the last few years, no one has really had a second term. So the idea never had a chance to really get discussed properly. Because it takes at least one decade for the thing to become an issue and that society and politicians get used to the topic.
I wanted to ask you about other potential sticks or the restrictions that would cause people to switch to public transport. I know in Sao Paulo they've implemented a license plate based restriction process.
Yeah, we have
and other cities, so that's still ongoing here.
It is.
And as far as I know, that's not something that's ever been tested anywhere in the United States or it's
not
in
that
Athens
I know.
Or,
no.
Could you tell a little bit about that the program?
Yes, that started more than 10 years ago. And it started first for environmental reasons. It was proposed by the Secretary of the Environment of the state of São Paulo, and it was a restriction that was applied to the most of the metropolitan areas because the other municipalities have to agree. Okay, because it proposed from the state, but municipality have autonomy, so they had to agree to the proposal. But most municipalities, or at least a good number of them, agreed. So since it was environmentally based, well, a car circulating at any time, anywhere, will pollute. So restriction was from 7 to in the morning to 8 o'clock at night, and for all the area involved. And that was very interesting, because the main consequence, well, you do not wake up on the following day and say, well, the air is better today, I'm just feeling... no, that's not the consequence, you see. The consequence of the traffic is better, because 20% of the cars are not circulating today. So the major consequence or visible consequence is that traffic improves. So what happened there was, it was a very difficult political fight to keep that. So the state actually abandoned the idea, but then the municipality of São Paulo bought the idea for a different purpose, for congestion, for reducing congestion. So in that sense, it was different because the application of this rotation license plate rotation system, it was restricted for peak hours from 7 to 10 in the morning and from 5 to 8 in the evening, and it was only in what we call the expanded center, which is the most congested area of the city. So it started with one purpose, but the main visible consequence was reducing congestion, and then the city actually capture the idea and transform it into a system for reducing congestion. But what happens in the last 10 years, you may be taking 20% of the cars away from the city because every two numbers in the plate are not allowed to circulate in one specific day. 1-2 on Monday, 3-4 on Tuesday, and so on. So what happens, but at the same time, for the number of cars, I don't know what happened in the last 10 years, but at least it must have doubled. Or so. That's the so all the gains, the 20% that you gain first are completely lost. And there are experience with that in Mexico. Mexico was one of the first cities to adopt it because of pollution, because they have very difficult setting in terms of pollution. And then São Paulo and then Santiago in Chile also had a similar system, but that only operated on some critical days concerning pollution, similar to Mexico City. But Mexico, it used to be a continuous system, not like Santiago. And then Bogota has a continuous system. And I'm not sure if now cars are not allowed to circulate on 2 days a week. I'm not sure. But anyway, but the point of the problem with this idea is that as motorization grows, your gains are lost.
Mm-hmm.
And that is definitely happening in São Paulo. So that some years ago there was some discussion about extending the restriction to 2 days during the week.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, you see, people do not like restriction. But there was an opinion survey conducted some 3 or 4 years ago when the idea was being discussed, and there was a reasonably strong support on the order of 40% to 50% for extending the restriction. Not very easy because people are used to 1 day restriction. Actually, when asked if they wanted the 1 day restriction to be abolished, I think something like 75% was against it. So we want it, we need it. One thing that we didn't mention, or I didn't mention anywhere, you didn't ask for, is that the proposals for the mobility and accessibility in the strategic plan for 2040. They start with land use propositions and not with transportation propositions.
Mm.
I mean, that takes time. no city will be transformed in 5 to 10 years. But there can be some significant transformation in 30 years' time. See, in 30 years' time, you may be rebuilding one third of your city. Well, that's a lot. So, but you have to start rebuilding it with some principle, with some conception in mind. If you don't do that, you never get anywhere. You just make your problem worse. So that was the good point of having a strategic plan, you see? And it started with, I won't remember the 13 or 14 propositions, but the basic idea and the first two or so were related to land use, other were with public transportation, other with non-motorized transport. Then for cars was basically proposing congestion charging after you sort of come up with a reliable public transport system, then something about safety, then something about financing, and something about the institutional framework, which that's the most amazing thing, was the need for some institutional arrangement to make transportation planning and operation work in the metropolitan area of São Paulo. I mean, everybody knows this is a bottleneck. We have a very complex institutional arrangement. We have the Metro, which is a state company, but operates only in the municipality of São Paulo. The Metro doesn't extend to any of the other cities in the metropolitan area. Okay, but the Metro is the strongest hand in transportation within the city of São Paulo also. So we have this complicated and no connection between urban planning and transportation planning and environmental planning and housing. I mean, this is just everybody talks. Everybody, well, we need to do that. We need to do that. We need to do that. But there's very little progress towards that. Okay? The Statute of the City is a very important legal piece. And also, something like 2 months ago, there is a new law. We will have a sort of a new mobility law setting priorities, and it's very clear priorities, public transportation priorities, no motorized. It allows for congestion charging, something which was not very clear in any law we had. So that's was discussed in the Congress, in the parliament, for 17 years when it was first submitted for discussion. So it's really a milestone.
Absolutely. What do you think led to it being passed now as opposed to the 17 years of?
I think that congestion in large cities in Brazil are really bothering everyone. So people are looking. And also, there's all this movement, you see, in favor of sustainable transportation. Everybody talks that public transportation should have priority. But when it comes to really taking space from cars to put a simple bus lane,
yeah,
it's a battle. And a lost battle,
so
in general.
This statute, will it give more power then to being able to take the space from the car for the lane? Or what is sort of going to be the practical?
Yeah, that's one criticism. It's only some guidelines. It presents guidelines. However, if the municipality doesn't follow the guidelines, it doesn't get federal money.
That's some teeth. That's some power.
Yes, okay. But what happens is that federal money in the last, it used to have a stronger role in financing in the 70s and in the 80s. Then for the last 20 years, not so much. But now, with all the money for this growth, accelerating growth plans from the federal government, and with money for the World Cup and the Olympics, the federal money now it's relevant again. So that may make a difference. Okay.
This has been great.
It really has been.
Thank you so much.
No, my pleasure.
São Paulo suffers from terrible traffic congestion, with short distances in the city center sometimes taking over an hour to cover. As the population continues to grow and increased economic opportunities allow for greater car ownership, The city will have to make a number of difficult decisions in order to combat this congestion. Certainly, the enactment of recent urban mobility legislation and the city's strategic plan, Sao Paulo 2040, are steps in the right direction. For an American audience, Sao Paulo is relevant because it is a city at a turning point. It is trying to determine how best to meet its citizens' transportation needs with a balance of public and private modes of transportation. In the United States, we have already embraced the car culture, and for environmental, cultural, and economic reasons, we are now trying to take a step back and address more of our mobility needs through public transportation networks. The tools and systems being used in Sao Paulo can serve as an example to cities in the United States, illustrating both difficulties in developing alternative transportation options and the potential benefits of doing so.